Welcome, and thanks for listening to Intrinsic Investigations. My name is Mr. Olivo, and I created this podcast because I've been fortunate enough over the last decade to see unique and thought-provoking projects happen in my classroom, and we wanted a place to showcase them. The true heart of this podcast lies not in the content discovered, but in exploring the personal stories of these young researchers as they journey through uncharted and unfamiliar intellectual terrain. By sharing their stories, we hope to normalize the challenges and frustrations that come with independent research, and also share those moments where students transcend the normal grind of the school day to discover concepts that range from the global to deeply personal. We will begin with a brief introduction to the student of focus, why they pick their topic, and discuss their growth over the course of the last year. It should be mentioned that the opinions expressed in this podcast in no way reflect the opinions of our school district, Bergen County Technical Schools and Special Services, or our school itself, Bergen County Technical High School Teterboro, or the College Board. The work detailed in this podcast was most likely completed in AP Capstone, but this podcast is in no way affiliated with the College Board. Today's podcast also has two people being interviewed at once, so we'll try to help the audience keep track of who's talking, when they're talking. But let's introduce ourselves. Stephanie, we'll start with you, and then we'll go on to Emily.
Hi, my name is Stephanie. I am a junior at Bergen Tech, and I'm in the Comm Art major.
Hi, my name is Emily Samuel. I'm also a junior, but I'm in the Computer Science major at Bergen Tech.
All right, what is something, Emily, that you like to do that you want the audience to know that goes beyond your major and your grade level at this school?
So beyond my major and my grade level, I'm actually really interested in culinary. And in addition to that, I also enjoy playing different types of games, like mobile games or video games. Most recently, I've been interested in like Minecraft and Pokemon, the card game.
And the games will have a crucial role to play with your research. Is there anything in particular you like to cook?
I really like baking bread, actually. I made some recently over this weekend. My family really liked it.
All right, Stephanie, what about you?
Outside of school, I volunteer a lot, especially towards environmental stuff. My parents are kind of a lot involved into it, and also I am in school, too. I'm also a dancer. I do Korean traditional dance. This year will be my 11th year, I believe.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So.
And how many years have you existed?
That's
a weird question.
17.
17, all right. So you've been around 17. 17, and 11 of those 17 years you've been doing Korean traditional dance. Awesome. All right, we're going to talk about several different things with the two of you, but you are two of the few people, well, I mean, there's a class of 33 this year, but you are the two people who elected to work with human subjects and the difficulties that come with that, and I shouldn't say difficulties, but just the logistical difficulties that come with that. You want to introduce your work, Stephanie, what it was focused on, and why you needed people for your work.
Okay. So my work is evaluating the effectiveness of two different marketing techniques, specifically functionality-focused and storytelling marketing. I wanted to research about marketing because it is a major of interest, and I wanted to research more about it. And I'm in the Comm Art major, and I'm also thinking of majoring in the creative arts industry, and I wanted to combine my interest of marketing and in the creative field together. So I thought that this was a great opportunity for me to do so, so that's why I wanted to do it. The reason why that I wanted to utilize surveys is because marketing, or just like marketing in general, just involves like human subjects. We kind of go and see marketing everywhere around us. And
oh, it's a common tool.
It is. And I didn't really figure out like what would be a very like effective way to measure how effective a marketing technique is without human subjects, because human subjects is kind of like the whole like process of it. Like you need them for marketing to work. So I was trying to figure out like different ways that I can do it, because I knew that before IRB is like very hectic, and I know that it can be very crazy and very time consuming. But even though like I was going through different marketing techniques, or even just different techniques, I didn't feel like it was a great representation of what I wanted to do. So I stuck with the survey and using human subjects. So I followed through the IRB process.
All right, great. And Emily, yourself, what were you looking into, and why were people necessary?
Yeah, so I started out AP Research kind of considering video games as one of the main topics to look into. I started originally with Tetris and then moved on to gacha games, which is a specific video game genre, which includes a gacha mechanic, which is basically a randomized reward system where users will purchase gacha pulls, which are like a chance to win a reward. And when looking into it more, I noticed that there were instances of manipulation that can be seen through the scholarly research. And looking at that, I wanted to consider a different perspective rather than the researchers, which was majority observation-based. And I wanted to see what the actual users perceived for this manipulation that was present in the gacha games. And I ended up deciding that doing a survey would be the best way to find out these user perceptions, as it would allow me to see the users' opinions. And going into AP Research, I was really interested by the IRB process and thought that it would be difficult to go through it, but decided ultimately through my research it was the most likely or most convenient way to get these user perceptions and these opinions, and that's why I decided to go through the entire IRB despite its difficulties.
And just for listeners who don't know what an IRB is, it's an institutional review board. So even at the high school level, we have a board of that review proposals every year that require human subjects. So that includes surveys, interviews, and at the high school level, you're trying to limit risk. You're trying to ensure that the students who are undertaking the study are being confidential with the work that they are collecting, with the data that they're collecting. And it does pose some challenges, especially when you're collecting data on other students at the school, which was the case with Stephanie, or you're collecting data on even people outside the school, which was the case with Emily, because you have to ensure consent, assent if they're minors. So the red tape is there for a reason, to ensure that the participation is voluntary and that they're being protected. But it does, as Emily will probably elaborate later, and Stephanie too, it does limit sample size. It does, as a high school student, I'm thinking, is probably the first time you've dealt with anything like this, where there's multiple levels of approval before you get it out there. Mm-hmm. Okay. Stephanie, let's start with you. You wanted to explore storytelling marketing and more function-based marketing. So could you explain what those two things are for people who may not be... I think once you say it, they'll be like, oh my gosh, this is every ad that I've ever seen. But what is storytelling marketing and how is it different than function-based marketing? And why were you looking into it?
So storytelling marketing and functionality-focused marketing are the two most popular marketing techniques that brands use every day. Storytelling marketing is exactly what it is, where a brand would use a storyline just to market their product. A lot of brands do this every day, such as Apple, Nike, Lululemon, Hollister, Tesla. A lot of brands utilize this without its consumers even knowing. Functionality focus, on the other hand, is completely different, where the brand will advertise specifically the functionality of the product. So storytelling marketing is usually a lot more creative, a lot more in-depth, definitely a lot more effective than functionality focus, just because there are definitely more aspects that go into that marketing technique itself, such as consumer-based connections, which is a huge thing, which is mentioned in a lot of my scholarly sources. It's mentioned a lot just because consumers will make connections with their brands without even knowing, and they're more prone to buy the product. And this is exactly what storytelling marketing is supposed to do, and this is the way that storytelling marketing manipulates its consumers, which is the reason why it is so effective. Functionality focused is a lot more concise, a lot more shorter. It's definitely for people who are more like straightforward, just looking for what the product is looking for and
what it can do.
So storytelling is a lot more long, definitely more towards like children, and functionality focused, what I've kind of found with my findings, is more towards like the adults, just because they're kind of like more time concise. So I knew this kind of background information through my scholarly sources. I was trying to identify the differences between the two marketing techniques. But then I found out that all of my targeted groups are adults or people with sample sizes of like over 100 people. And originally, I also wanted to do something that with like involves with 100 people, because that it was like the only way that I knew that it would be credible, because a lot of these scholarly sources were talking about how they have participants with over 100 people and how that they were able to generalize their findings into a more general context. But I knew that with the IRB process and with talking with my mentor and Mr. Olivo, I knew that that number of participants wasn't possible, or it would be, but just like with a lot more time and
a lot of things for the time frame.
Yeah. So I knew that that wasn't going to happen. So that was definitely a huge limitation. And, you know, just like kind of like going around and trying to figure out like how I was able to use human subjects, specifically just because, like I said before, all of my scholarly sources surrounded with adults. And that's also one of the primary reasons why I chose to do my research with adolescents, specifically in our school from 9th to 12th grades, because I knew that our school can provide like one example of how adolescents can be affected by these marketing techniques. And I wanted to see it in real life and how it evolves. So that's why I knew that I had to go through the IRB process. I knew that I was dealing with minors, so definitely more consent forms, a lot more IRB approval shenanigans. So I knew what I was getting myself into, but I definitely knew that I wanted to keep going forward with the IRB process.
And your work focuses on marketing, which, if we're going to look at it broadly, is this idea of informing someone about a product, I would say ultimately with a desire to get them to want that product.
Yes. So storytelling marketing and functionality focus are both products that want you to get drawn to the product. And especially with storytelling marketing, because one of the greatest aspects is the creative portion, which is kind of what grasps the consumers in the first place, which is like the visual appeal of it. And that's one of the reasons why it is so effective, and how consumers, without even knowing that it's storytelling marketing, see stories and how they relate to their own personal life. And that also connects back to the self-brand connections that consumers make.
That seems like a perfect segue into Emily's work, because Emily, you were looking at gacha games, not gachapon. You can explain the difference between those two things. It seems, though, that in a way, the mechanics of how a gacha game is designed is in and of itself a marketing tool. What's your work ultimately about, and why did you want to use survey data to explore the perception of this work in users of these gacha games?
Yeah, so kind of to split this up into three sections. You mentioned gachapon, which is actually where the gacha mechanic originates from. It's a physical kind of vending machine that originates from Japan, where you get a capsuled toy, which is randomized. Basically, there's a few different options for what the consumer can receive, and then they pay money. It's usually like quarters or like a dollar, and they end up getting the randomized capsule toy. And then this was then implemented into video games, as I mentioned before, where the user will purchase these gacha pulls, which is like kind of paying the quarters of the dollar into getting a virtual reward. And this can be either like a character, a weapon, an accessory, or something else. And looking more into the gacha games, one of the first sources I found was on addiction and gambling within gacha games. And this is what kind of jump-started my journey into what else can I look at and what's the research gap. And the research gap I ended up identifying relied specifically in the mechanics and characteristics of gacha games. And looking back to the marketing aspect of that, the entire point of a gacha game is to market to the user to market to the user and kind of manipulate them into wanting to purchase these gacha pulls to get these randomized rewards. And this is usually done through manipulation. And after looking through the mechanics and characteristics, I identified the manipulative tactics that were present in them. And after looking at these, I decided the best way to see how the user perceives these manipulative tactics, which will then like induce desire to purchase these gacha pulls, was through a survey. And the reason I decided to put myself through this IRB process was because I needed people who played gacha games to respond, or I needed people who played gacha games to get data from. And I couldn't guarantee that from people at Bergen Tech. I could only really guarantee that from people online. And that's what led me to make a survey that I could send out on social media, which I was able to receive data from.
It seems that the two of you in both of your responses seem, you mentioned the word want and manipulation multiple times. And then you're looking at, I guess, you, well, in your case, Emily, user perception in the game. And then is it user perception for you as well, Stephanie, or?
I would say so a little bit, just because, like, you know, like, manipulation, like, it kind of, like, comes across with, like, how the consumer also views something. And so if a consumer kind of views a ad or a storytelling ad as manipulative, then yes, I guess you can kind of say that. But, like, you know, that's not, like, the first thought that they come across when they see an ad, because it isn't, and they don't really know that it's being manipulated. And that's one of the reasons why that I wanted to explore this gap is, like, how do consumers actually know that they're getting manipulated, or how do they know they're actually getting informed? And that was one of the key questions that I had throughout my research journey, was, like, how are consumers are able to differentiate what they're trying to view as, like, true or not? Because every day we see things on social media, everything we see is, like, can be false. AI is definitely getting better, and I've come to my personal experience where I see friends and family getting manipulated when they don't even know, and they might not know because they're not getting informed, which is one of the things that I wanted my research to do, which is to hopefully inform. And I came up to this conclusion because other scholarly sources that did similar researches utilizing a survey and seeing how marketing techniques are used in, like, generations, I saw that, like, how surveys are being used and how they also came up with the idea of spreading awareness, or, like, spreading or making the consumers more informed about manipulative acts. So
we all have cognitive biases and, you know, mental shortcuts that we take, and ads are just one way to play on those cognitive biases.
100%.
But even a gacha pull is sort of like the unexpected reward. It's essentially a slot machine mechanic, and we are exposed to slot machine mechanics all the time, whether it's through phone design or other things. Okay. Now, before we get into things for other students who want to engage with human subjects to keep in mind, that was, you two just gave a really good overview of sort of what you were looking for. What did your survey data end up revealing, even if the sample size was limited? And how would you maybe push this further had you more time or more access to more respondents? So we'll start with you, Emily.
Yeah, so with my data, I collected quantitative data through a Likert scale. And you would probably see Likert scales in daily life if you've ever taken a survey. It's basically the measure of how much someone agrees or disagrees with something. And this can be based on a 5-point or a 7-point Likert scale. Within my own data, I decided to use a 7-point Likert scale, which, and I'm just going to say the categories. It was strongly disagree, slightly disagree, neutral, slightly agree, and strongly agree. And using this, I was able to kind of help the participants in my survey not default to a neutral response with a 7-point Likert scale. And using this, I was able to measure to what extent people agreed or disagreed with my questions. And my questions were based on how the user perceives the mechanics and characteristics, as well as how they perceive the manipulative tactics that were present in each mechanic and characteristic. And so using this quantitative data, I was able to conduct statistical analysis. And through this, there were two mechanics that were most affected, or were
most effective, I guess.
Two mechanics that the manipulative tactics were most effective.
Gotcha. Okay. No pun intended there, but keep going.
In affecting the user perceptions in order to induce a desire to purchase these gacha pulls. And the first one was characters, which was most affected by, let's see if I, promotions. And this, the promotions of these characters is a manipulative tactic, which induces the desire to purchase gacha pulls to get these characters, as well as rarity, where either characters or weapons or accessories are based on a rarity. And using the advantages of that, which is also a manipulative tactic, the user is more likely to purchase gacha pulls to get either any of these items based on the rarity. And I guess one thing I want to recognize is the fact that I had posted my survey on social media, and the main one I used was Reddit, Instagram, Twitter, and Tumblr. And kind of posting these online there, I was able to get participants from different social media platforms to kind of give their opinions on these gacha games.
Would it be accurate then to say that the driving factor in your respondents was the character promotion and the rarity?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure I'm summing you up, right? All right, Stephanie, so then based on your survey data regarding storytelling marketing and function marketing, was there a preference in the audience that you found, or was there something else that was revealed?
So a preference was definitely found. A majority of the individuals chose storytelling marketing as their ad of choice. So I wanted to figure out which ad of choice would these my participants would be more prone to be attracted to. So I was marketing a water bottle, and I thought of making the ads because I'm in the commerce major and I do design, but that introduces bias into the problem. I was thinking of maybe AI making it, but then there were limitations with AI and like how many times I would generate it. Like there was a lot of questions that would coming around that. So through my mentor, we got a third party designer who is anonymous. I don't know who they are. They only got the information that would be put in these ads. And the only thing that is different between these ads is the design of storytelling and functionality.
But the bottle is exactly the same.
Yes, the bottle is exactly the same. So with these two ads, I put them in the survey and I asked 7 open-ended questions. These questions are, which ad did you prefer? What kind of aspect did it? Was it eye-catching for you? Like, was it the color? Was it the shape? Was it the story? I was asking very specific questions because that is what storytelling would do. And after I got that, I got all the data and I basically organized them all into pie charts. And I found out that majority of the participants who answered the survey were juniors, following freshmen and sophomores and the majority of the individuals who did it were freshmen. Then it is seniors and sophomores, and the last one was freshmen. There could have been bias in that, not really sure. But off of that, I found that majority of the individuals who chose storytelling marketing were females, and that was in every category per grade. So per grade, per grade, storytelling marketing was the ad of choice, and particularly the gender for that was females. For males, majority of the individuals chose functionality focused, and I tie that in with scholarly sources, and they were saying that like all males, they kind of like look more towards functionality focused ads and how they are more prone to more straightforward and direct. But then females, they actually look forward to like the design and how it kind of affects them. So I kind of tied those findings with like scholarly sources that I have outside that I've researched with. And after I got all this demographics and I tied the demographics with which ad of their choice, I did a content analysis where I had codes. And in these codes, I was kind of going for like the connotation that they had in these responses. And I was seeing what kind of like things that they were saying in these responses, such as, were they doing more of the description? Were they were mentioning more about like how the ad was placed or like how the water bottle was being advertised? Or was it more about the text? Was it more about how the information was being given to the consumer? So I was trying to get these questions kind of solved out using a content analysis and analyzing the responses that I was able to get from my survey. So I was able to get quantitative data from the survey, and out of the responses out of that, I was able to do some qualitative analysis after.
And just to make sure that the audience, I don't know, kind of gets a mental image of how different the ads were, I'm going to describe this and you can tell me if I'm wrong.
Sure.
But you had, it was almost like a teal, presumably steel water bottle.
Yes.
And then it was, you know, one ad is just, this is all the stuff, you know, this is the size of it. This is the how many liters of water it can hold, whatever. Yes. And then the other one was, I believe, a woman climbing a hiking trail, and it was just, you know, it's like pave your own way or something like that, like some kind of adventure element.
Yeah.
And the adventure element ultimately held more sway with the female demographic of the school who happened to respond to your survey.
Yes.
Okay. All right, I'm just making sure I'm summing this up correctly. We're entering the last few minutes of this, so let's talk more about the mechanics of getting a survey out there and what the two of you would recommend for anyone who's looking to do research on human subjects at a high school level. What do you feel like you want to impart on people who want to do something like this, whether it's surveys, interviews, ethnographic research? If they want to do something where they're going to have to get consent, and assent potentially if they're younger than 18, what would your recommendations be of how to navigate this process? We'll start with you, Emily, and then we'll go to Stephanie.
So when I first started considering to do a survey, I had looked into the difference between assent and consent forms, and the basic difference is assent forms, you need consent from the parents as well as consent from the children. But for just consent forms, you just need to get consent from adults. So I ultimately decided that limiting my sample size to adults over the age of 18 was going to be most effective so that I wouldn't have to deal with the difficulties of an assent form. So that's one thing that was to consider, is whether you want to include adolescents and adults, just adolescents or just adults. I ended up deciding just adults. And then the second thing to consider is, well, the main difference for me and Stephanie was that she used Bergen Tech students, and I used participants that found my survey online.
So it's general public.
Yeah, the general public. And with that, the biggest difficulty was getting people to find my survey and also getting people to actually participate. And this was most present on Reddit, as I was able to get comments back of what people actually thought of my survey. I remember one of the comments was, "Is this a scam?" Another one was, "Why do you need my email?" A third one is, "If you're trying to get responses, this is the worst way." It was very negative feedback, but after looking more into it, I just couldn't get around the fact that I needed a signature. And to get a signature, it would look like I was collecting the person's email, but in reality I was not. It's just one of the drawbacks of Google surveys. Google Forms.
And so that ironically is what there was a teacher in here last period who is about to do research for their doctoral degree, and he was just showing me, hey, did you come across, I believe it's called JotForm. And again, we're not trying to badmouth Google Forms or JotForm or promote JotForm, but I can see that being a roadblock where if you want to submit an electronic signature on Google Forms, it requires you to log in with your email. And for you trying to do a confidential collection of data, that makes things really hard because then you have to almost immediately delete that email so that you don't know who that person is. JotForm seems to get around that, and you know, it's everything's a work in progress. I'll just make students aware of that next year as a way to get around this, where both the parent and potentially the parent, and if there's a child involved, can give consent and assent on a similar form without the email collection. It's not perfect because he was actually just telling me about some other roadblocks, but you know, it's key to the process. So Stephanie, for you, I guess same question.
Yes. So the question was like what we would tell people about surveys.
Yeah, like what advice would you have for people who would be trying to engage in research with human subjects? Because even as the College Board points out, like they have this video called Surveys Are Hard.
Yeah.
And it's very much about what the two of you went through. It's hard to get people to take the time to fill out the surveys. It's hard to get consent. It's hard to navigate the IRB process. So what advice do you have for them if they want to do this?
So similar to like what Emily already said, I did have difficulty about participants finding my survey. My survey was sent out through a school email. My mentor was my teacher, and I asked her if she was able to send out my survey to the whole entire school, and she did, and I was able to get responses off of that. But there were times where I would talk to a person, if it's during our class or not, and I would tell them about the survey and say, hey, you should fill it out if you're interested, and they try to go find it, but they can't find it.
Yeah, I gotcha.
It's like that kind of like kind of technical difficulties definitely added to the difficulties that kind of happened throughout this whole process, but that's just kind of what happens through this process. One thing that helped me the most is after, I would say the first, maybe the second IRB process, like after the panel met, I was able to sit down with one of the IRB members, and I was able to talk to them about my research and how I'm able to improve it and hopefully get the approval. And the thing that really stuck to me the most is what the IRB panel was actually looking for. And that's when I kind of went into looking into that. And I found out that IRB looks for specifically three things, and I would say this is specifically towards adolescents,
mm-hmm.
and it is for respect for persons, benefices, and justice. To go briefly into it, respect for persons means that the person is able to choose what kind of questions that they're able to answer.
Right, there's no required questions on those Google forms.
Benefices means that anonymity, the participants stay anonymous, so we don't know who they are. So, and that kind of ties into the third point, which is justice, providing no biases and no unfairness to all the participants. So after I was able to research and kind of differentiate what my methodology kind of was like lacking, I found out that anonymity rule was not being applied. So I knew that I had to do something about that. But kind of going back and trying to find like what I was missing, or like what is the like the source of the problem, is kind of what helps me identify like what was the problem through the IRB process, but also like through my whole entire research. There was a lot of times where I had to go back to the beginning, not towards like the middle, but like the beginning of my research, where I found out that there was errors there. And that's how I was able to identify any problems, more gaps, and like even just research more about scholarly sources off of that. So,
well, I think every research process is iterative, and sometimes you go back to something you wrote 3 months ago, and then all of a sudden you have this idea that there's no way that the you who existed 3 months ago could have had that revelation, because you just know what you know now.
Mm-hmm.
All right, before literally the bell is about to ring in like 2 minutes, so before we wrap this up, any last words you want to say about your work, I mean, it could be like gotcha pulls for the win. Like, I don't know, but is there anything you want to sum up this conversation with, or parting words of wisdom?
Well, I guess when it comes to an IRB approval, if at first you don't succeed, just try it again, because yeah, I know I didn't get approved after, I think, the first or second time. So,
but the third time was a charm.
The third time worked.
Yeah.
So just keep trying and keep adding more and more and more detail into your IRB if you really want to do it. But you can always jump ship if you really need to.
That's true, too. Yeah, I think the explicitness, like once you lay out everything where there's no one could possibly misunderstand what you're doing, it just improves your chances of getting approved. That's really good advice. Doesn't have to be about IRBs, by the way, Stephanie, unless you wanted to.
But I would do the same thing. Like, just because you don't get approved in the first, second, third round, that doesn't mean that you have to quit using your IRB. Mm-hmm. Continue with it. And like for me, it took me multiple tries because I'm using adolescents, so a lot more IRB panel went into it. But don't give up. Like, you can always like go and like think about different solutions. If not, try to use your peers around you. I was going to say something, but I kind of forgot.
It's okay. It does become more restrictive when you work with children, especially the children in your own school.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. When Mr. Olivo posts the IRB stuff in the beginning of the year, try to use that as a tool to kind of navigate how you're going to use your research. Because I went through the IRB process, I had to fill it out because for the IRB panel. But then I realized like utilizing that doc kind of helped me figure out like what I was kind of lacking and what I had to research more on. So if you're stuck on your research in the beginning of the year or any time of the year, you can always refer to that document and see what you're kind of lacking and kind of improve what you're kind of looking for.
Awesome. Well, thank you to both of you. Have a lovely rest of your day.
Thank you, Mr. Olivo.
Thank you, Mr. Olivo.
All right, signing off.